Welcome back to Your Valley Sports Plug. This is a roundtable live stream. It is Tuesday, March 11th, 2025. And baby, we are back. Last week, Tallman and I did an impromptu heat check live, but now we got some special guests, Stephen Miller and Mr. T Jr. in the house. So the table is round once again. But fellas, what is going on? How are we doing tonight?
Yo, feeling good. What a crazy start to this week with the whole NFL free agency. What's crazy is how the NFL finds all these ways to just dominate the calendar year. We're in the middle of NBA season coming to an end. You got baseball spring training. You got March Madness coming up. Yet the NFL is still stealing the show. So I'm looking forward to talking to that with you guys.
Yeah, what do they say, boys? The NFL reigns supreme. Even when there's no games, it's all we talk about. So, yeah, some surprising signings. I definitely New York's making a splash with the Justin Fields. So I'm curious what you guys think about that, what that starts to do in terms of the other quarterbacks that are left out there for the Steelers and MFC's team over there. So I'm seeing what he thinks about Aaron Rodgers potentially going there. I don't know. There's talk on the street, but no, excited to be here. Sad I missed last week.
I came here for two reasons. One is to hear Chris's DK Metcalf takes, and two is to shed a tear for the triumphant end of a very sad and dark chapter of ASU basketball with them losing just before we came on the air to Kansas State to end their season with a first round Big 12 knockout tournament loss. So looking forward to talking a little bit more about that. And hopefully, it's not looking much brighter for my Kansas Jayhawks as we go into the tournament, but I think this is going to be one of those crazy years. There really isn't like a consensus number one. So, yeah, looking forward to talking some ball.
Hell yeah. Well, I'm glad to have you guys all here. Definitely plenty of sports news to break down. I think we'll probably start with ASU basketball. It's the freshest wound, the newest talk of the town. Of course, got to get into that free agency news. Plenty of big signings around the league and even here locally. But first, I have to ask you, if you are here watching on YouTube live or on the playback, please like and subscribe. Go ahead and follow us across all social medias at AZ_VSP. That's Instagram, X, TikTok. We will be posting every Tuesday. I'm sorry, not posting. We will be going live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. So make sure you set your notifications so you can see when we're going live. Guys, I don't know if you're paying attention. This is now 2 weeks and Michael Benjamin is not present. And so I have to address the elephant in the room. We have traded him to another podcast for two microphone stands and a spit guard. No, I'm just kidding. Mike is enjoying some much needed time off. He's got some family in town. So we miss his presence. I know I certainly miss his presence because y'all might not know this watching it, but he does a ton on the production side. He puts together all our thumbnails, pretty much all of our social media posts. And when we start the show, he's doing the transitions, putting the logos up, doing the video. So when I get thrust into those duties, it's a little bit more sloppy and not as smooth as you may have noticed to start. But nevertheless, we will move on and we will overcome and we look forward to Mike's return next week for a very special Pass the Outlet where we have a special guest who will be joining us, Stephen Miller, and we're going to talk all about the March Madness tournament coming up as we are now in the month of March. But fellas, plenty to talk about, so I'm going to quit doing plugs and jabbering on. Like we talked about, ASU basketball eliminated from the Big 12 tournament just hours ago. And also news today is that Bobby Hurley is expected to return next year to coach the Arizona State Sun Devils. It is technically the last year of his contract, but obviously there was some questions about if he would be let go of that contract early or not. But since we have Mr. ASU himself here, I want to ask you, Stephen, what do you think of them being eliminated from the tournament so soon and Bobby's return next season?
So it's bittersweet. One, the season could not end soon enough. My other half from the Miller family, the more delusional of ASU fans who joins me on this podcast from time to time, he had high hopes going into this season. And I think coming off of a shocking run through the Big 12 for ASU football, people were expecting, that kind of continued success, that maybe finally the sleeping giant that was ASU athletics had finally woken up. But yeah, the basketball program was in much more dire straits than football was going into this year. You know, they've really languished under Bobby. They've been basically a 500 team. If you look at his stats over the years, I mean, he hasn't done much better than Herb Sendek did, who he replaced. The only real tournament success that he's had has been making the play-in games, which in my opinion, don't even really count because, you know, you're playing a couple days before the actual tournament and you're playing for a spot that usually leads to you getting rolled by a much better team. So, this wasn't a shock that they lost. Like, they were out Jaden Quaintance, their star 17-year-old center, who I think every ASU basketball fan at this point is just praying that he returns and that someone rolls up the NIL dump truck and just makes sure that, because he can't leave for the league yet. He's the second youngest player in NCAA basketball, right behind Cooper Flagg, who is eligible and will probably end up going number one from Duke. But they had something weird had happened with, I don't know if you had watched the ASU U of A game at the end of the season. Toward the end of the game, BJ Freeman headbutts Caleb Love. There's an altercation that goes on. It leads to, you know, Bobby not bringing the team out to shake hands with the rivals from down south. So there was a lot of weirdness going on there. There were rumors that Freeman had been, you know, already disciplined multiple times and that it hadn't really hit like the news headlines. And they ultimately ended up cutting him from the team and suspending him indefinitely for conduct detrimental to the team. Still a lot of smoke and not a lot of answers on what happened there. But this continues a really troubling trend with Bobby with getting either transfers. I think Freeman came from UW Milwaukee. He had been like the leading scorer in his conference going from a small school coming to ASU. And then for whatever reason, on the court, off the court, didn't really work and ended up getting dismissed. I think you could probably go back at least the last 2 or 3 years, and there's always been a player of starting caliber who has had something weird disciplinary hovering over him for the season. And it really just takes away and ends up being a distraction. Takes talented guys off the court, and I can't imagine what it does to your locker room. So there's, I think, a lot of skepticism. Does Bobby really have control of this program? You know, this was a top 10 recruiting class, which, you know, that's like gold in basketball, you know, especially right now with NIL and ASU not necessarily being the destination that a lot of those blue chip schools are. So I think everyone's rightfully calling Bobby out. You know, I think bringing him back probably because of the name recognition and because there just aren't any good candidates out there. There's no Kenny Dillingham waiting in the wings who's finding success somewhere else that has ties to the university. So I don't have a problem with bringing him back. I just hope that they bring back some of those guys that made them a top 10 recruiting class and they find a way to keep him on the court.
Yeah, I would agree that we definitely need to see them get some more talent attracted here. And it's like kind of seems like they're at a stalemate in a lot of ways where, you know, you've had Bobby Hurley here for so long and he did have a lot of name recognition 10 years ago. Obviously, especially what was that Christian Laettner documentary that had come out? Anyone remember?
Everyone Hates Christian Laettner.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that was great. I loved it. But that's what Bobby Hurley was a big part of that, obviously, having played with Christian Laettner. So that was kind of like the selling point. And we thought, oh, this is going to be good for recruiting. Bobby's a fiery coach. And almost seems like it, you know, not from a recruiting point necessarily, but like his fire that we're appreciating kind of seemed to be a detriment at times where I remember in recent years, us having conversations, especially on this podcast, even saying he needs to tone it down a little bit. He needs to cool his jets. And like, you got to be the bigger person. Like, I get it's your rival. There might've been some words, there might've been some stuff going on, but at the end of a game, you let it all go and you shake hands and you move on and lick your wounds. And so I don't know. I'm kind of all over the place with my thought process, but Tallman's, you got any thoughts on ASU basketball?
Throw money at them.
Build a new arena.
That too. Yeah. Make it easier to watch games. God damn it. Like looking at his like stats and stuff, like he's very mediocre. Like if you think about it, but like, you know, Steven was saying, is like, who else is out there? Like, who else could you get? It's like when people talk about like Kyler having a shitty year. It's like, well, who are you going to get at a quarterback? Like, there's nobody out there. So, like, he's coming back. That's good. I mean, if you look at it, it looks like he always has two shitty years and then one really kick-ass year. So maybe that's something here. That's some sort of
concept. So where are we at in that pattern right now? Is this...
Next year he's due for a next year's 20, a good year? 20-plus wins. No, dude, I think it'd be a lot of fun to get into ASU basketball. I admittingly don't watch a ton of ASU basketball. I got stuck watching a shit ton of St. John's because of friends that I have and stuff. So, which was not bad. They're a great team this year.
Exciting year for St. John's. Yeah,
no, dude, they've been
great. A sleeping Final Four pick potentially. So,
no, that's absolutely. Damn. But no, it blows my mind because I feel like with the campus that we like, ASU is beautiful. Like, it's such a beautiful campus. Like, there's so much to do, which also might be detrimental to our success. Like Steven was saying, also these dudes can't stay. Something always happens. Like, off the court, it's like, well, yeah, have you ever been to Mill Avenue, dude? Like, fuck. Like, that's just what happens down there. But no, it's just with NIL and stuff, I feel like it might get tougher to get some of these people to come here, because you do have these bigger schools that do draw. Just with the namesake alone, you have the Dukes, the blue chip people that are just always year in, year out solid. You get national exposure, you're getting games on TV. It might get tougher, but I don't know. I just, the name, you know, for me, like, I always recognize Hurley. So Bobby Hurley, that the whole thing, Christian Laettner, him being a Duke guy. So it's like, you would think on paper, it's like, he's got to be pretty successful. Like, he's not terrible, but it's like, it seems like there's just these weird little things. That the U of A thing was interesting to see, because that definitely, I think I saw it on like ES, like Sports Center showing it. So, I don't know. It's cool to see the chippiness, but I think he tries to act like Kenny, and tries to be like super like fiery, where I think it's too much when you're not doing anything, like you're not producing. So I don't know. I'm going to start watching more of it though, because I'd like to get into it and maybe go to games. It'd be fun.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's been a long ass time since I've been to an ASU basketball game. Honestly, I think the last ASU basketball game I attended was when we were playing Washington and Markelle Fultz was playing. If that tells you anything, that was a while ago.
He's a veteran now, so like, yeah, he's had an entire career since you've been back there.
He's gotten the yips, he's overcome the yips, he's been traded. But Steven, you mentioned that someone might need to back up the money truck, the Brinks truck, to get some NIL money flowing here. I don't know if you guys heard about this. What was that? Did that not share?
There, Mike, we go. Where are you?
Yeah, Mike, we need you. But I saw this story. James Harden makes high six-figure donation to ASU's NIL program. And this was from a couple of weeks ago. So obviously, James Harden is probably the most notable ASU basketball alum. He is the only player in ASU basketball history to have his jersey retired. And it's cool to see him still having love for the program. And I haven't really looked into this any further, but did you guys hear about this donation that he made?
I did. And I got to say, not impressed.
Oh,
the news that just came out this week, Steph Curry's donating eight figures to Davidson. So like, we don't have a chance if our biggest alums are opening up the checkbook and donating a couple hundred thousand dollars. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd take that in a heartbeat, but also, like, this is what we're competing against. Like, everyone is now calling on their superstars to basically, you know, pay the players. And I've been a longtime proponent that the players needed to be getting a cut of the TV money, that the system was flawed, and that way too much shady stuff was happening behind the scenes. But yeah, this is nowhere near enough. This would be great if it started like a flow of money coming from other ASU alums. But unfortunately, the sad history of ASU basketball is that we don't have a lot of Hardens. There's not a lot of guys who made the league and stuck around long enough to see a second contract. A ton of them in the G League, a ton of them overseas, but not nearly the success or, you know, just again, the deep pockets that you need to compete nowadays. I think the biggest NIL booster last time I saw is the Santan Ford dealership. Like, you know, and that's great. Like if you've, you know, driven around like Drive Time Radio, you hear all their ads and everything. But no, we just, for how big the university is and for how much of a pull, like we have the same student base roughly as Ohio State with none of the success. Like that's a huge problem.
Yeah. I get that too, where it's like, who is going to, like, out of former players, like I just mentioned, James Harden is the only one who's made significant money. I mean, I wouldn't expect Ike Diagu to be throwing 6-7 figures our way. But yeah, I think the high six figures sounds great until you realize that's less than $1 million. And James Harden has earned well over $100 million in his career. Also within the same article, and it says in 2007, Richard Jefferson donated $4.5 million or $4.2 million, which, I mean, when you account for inflation and you carry the one, that's like $15 million or something. I don't know. That's probably bad math. But
he built the practice facility. Like, he just single-handedly came out and just said, like, okay, whatever you guys need, here you go. And Richard Jefferson didn't make that kind of money. So yeah, there's just not a tradition of success at ASU, and stuff like this shows. Yeah, there's a bunch of other places that have seen eight figures from Harden that aren't necessarily institutions of higher learning.
So maybe they just need to get something in the arena. I don't know. I can't figure this out. We'll have to brainstorm some ideas to entice James Harden to make higher donations. But yeah, I don't know. Disappointing to say the least. I think obviously you had highlighted it coming off the hype of the football season, the new athletic director, maybe ASU sports is turning it around, only to have a severely, supremely disappointing basketball season here. Again, once again, not making the tournament, not even making first four or whatever they're calling it these days. I don't know, man. I really don't know where they go from here. Obviously, you know, give Bobby the last year of his contract, see how he does, see who he can bring in. But future's bleak. But plenty of time to talk about that. Like I mentioned, tune in next week for Pass the Outlet. I'm sure we will talk more ASU hoops as well as other college basketball news. But moving on, not burying the lead too much. We're not even 20 minutes in, so it wasn't even buried that deep. The Arizona Cardinals made some moves. Free agency started yesterday, which was Monday, the 10th of March. I believe it didn't really start. I think it's called like the legal tampering period, where teams can start agreeing to contracts with players, but the ink's not actually going on the paper yet for a couple days. But obviously the big news is the signing of linebacker Josh Sweat from the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. He had 2.5 sacks in the Super Bowl, 8 sacks in the regular season last year. Familiarity with Jonathan Gannon, as well as, what's the other coach? Nick Rallis. So I think that probably helped us get him. It wasn't initially, I know a lot of fans expected us to target Milton Williams heavily. And if he didn't get taken, then we would go pursue Josh Sweat. So didn't get Milton Williams, but did get Josh Sweat. VSP Tallman, I know you didn't have a lot to say about ASU basketball, so I want you to chime in here first on the Cardinals signing.
Yeah, I know. When it comes to ASU basketball, I'm more a bandwagon fan. Like when they were number three in the country, I was all about it. But yeah, oh baby, Josh Sweat. Talk about the perfect football name for someone that's coming to live in the desert when it's going to be 120 degrees. I hope he's ready to sweat, that's for sure. But no, this is big. This is really big for the Cardinals when basically I think we can speak for every single fan where it was, guys, let's do something. Let's make some type of splash move. Let's open up that wallet, Mr. Bidwell, and let's pay, you know, some top talent that's available in the league. And that happened right here. I know there's another Eagles player that the Cardinals were linked to. It was Milton Williams, who ended up being signed with the Patriots. I know a lot of people were preferring that over Sweat, and I saw some criticism on people online saying that the Cardinals overpaid for Sweat, but I'm not in that camp. I think it's a great signing. 4 years, $76.4 million. He's going to come in, slot in as a proven edge rusher that's going to give you an instant jolt to getting after the quarterback. And he's about to turn 28 years old. So, I mean, you're getting him at a good time, right in his prime. Hopefully we got a couple more years of him at his peak over the next couple seasons here. But I'm stoked about it. I mean, you got that recognition with Jonathan Gannon. I mean, that's just paying off right there. I mean, Josh Sweat didn't come here because of the Arizona Cardinals overall report card that Chris and I went over last week. The only reason he came here is because of the only A that the Cardinals got, and that was the head coach. So it's that culture that Gannon's building, and we're seeing that pay off with free agents coming here that want to play for him. So this is great. Obviously, I'm in the boat here where I hope they're not done. There's still some other needs that this team needs, which I know we're going to talk about here shortly.
Dude, all hail Monty. Like, I'm so happy Steve's not here anymore. Like, not you, Steven. I'm happy that I got to be here with you. But
different, man, Steve.
Different Steve. It was an old friend, an old friend. Oh, man. The beginning of this past season, I was so upset because we didn't do anything. We didn't address this position at all. We rode with Dennis Gardeck and whatever the hell else we could put out there and expect. I mean, I like him. He's a great dude, great locker room guy, great character dude. Like, the dude works his ass off. But, man, I was shocked to actually see this signing and see us open that wallet and have, like, it makes me so much happier to have somebody that actually does something in the offseason, because every year I'd sit there and never see the Cardinals do anything. So even today, I didn't even look because I'm so PTSD'd from it that I had no idea we made other signings. But, man, I think that this is it's a lot of money. Yes, that definitely sucks. But you get what you pay for in this league. And I mean, 90% of the time, there's 10% where it just doesn't work out. But he's a proven player. He's come here, like VSP Tallman said, just because of Gannon and the culture he's created, him being, you know, attached to the Eagles at the same. It's just, yeah, I'm excited. I think it's something we need. I hope we're not done. That's the big thing. I know it's a lot, but we have a lot of room to make moves. So I hope we just make some other splashes that are big as well. But it's good to see us bolster a position that was definitely very, very high up on our priority and need.
I second everything you guys said. It is rare to see the Cardinals making like a football fans type of signing. Like, this is the kind of thing that makes your team better, that falls under the radar. Like, it's not the big splashy, you know, like every defense needs a good pass rusher and every offense needs a competent quarterback. And then everything, you know, you can kind of freestyle the rest of it. So it was good to see them get kind of their guy to finally have on defense. I did get a little nervous when I saw that we were paying, you know, a star from the Super Bowl, because you always worry that, you know, it's like, are you paying for future performance or are you paying for what he did? And he just had the game of his life on the biggest stage. So I hope that he's got more in the tank. I mean, he's averaging like a little over eight sacks a season over the last 4 years. Like you said, he's 28. So it's not like we're going out there and getting Von Miller or getting some other guy who's coming out here just to work on his golf game. Like, we're bringing in a young guy who's hungry, who's had a little bit of success and hopefully can slot in and immediately be a veteran voice in the locker room, because Lord knows we need that.
No, for sure. I love the signing, honestly. And I've seen pundits and people that give grades on these sort of moves. It's been all across the board. I think one Kyle Odegaard or someone like that gave the move an F. Others are giving it a B plus. So, you know, who really knows? I think that, you know, what Steven just said there is a valid concern. Is there going to be a Super Bowl hangover? Is he gonna, you know, he's not an old guy, he's 28, he should still have plenty left in the tank, and he has performed well in the past. But is he just gonna collect his paycheck now and take it easy and try and get one more big paycheck after this? I mean, 4-year deal, 32 years old for a linebacker. He might still have one more, you know, decent size contract left in him, maybe a 2-3 year deal after this. And as far as overpaying, the 4-year $76 million isn't bad. I mean, if you look at what Milton Williams got, I think he got closer to $100 million for his deal. And so we kind of saved money in a lot of regards that way. But also, the thing with free agency is you're going to overpay inherently, because you're competing with other teams to try and lure them to sign with you. And whatever else might be a selling point might not be enough. The money gets you over any hurdle that they have. Like, if they looked at the report card for the Arizona Cardinals And had he not had that relationship with Jonathan Gannon prior, maybe he doesn't come here. But regardless, I think it definitely fills a position of need. And it's very exciting because even just last week or the week before, Michael Bidwell was on the local radio here saying how they want to build this team through the draft. And they're not necessarily hyper-focused on building their team and signing guys through free agency. So for them to do this, period, is amazing. But for them to come out the gate within the first 2 hours of the free agency period is even better. I mean, I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek because behind the scenes, I was texting Tallman and Mike being like, oh, we're an hour in and the Cardinals haven't even done anything yet. Oh, Monty Austin Ford. Oh, all he wants to do is draft players. But it's like, give him a chance. Because literally right after I sent that text, I'm pretty sure, Tallman, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure it was less than 20 minutes after I texted you guys that the ESPN notification came.
Yeah, maybe about an hour or so. Okay. Or no. Yeah, you're right. It was that soon.
If you think about it though, Chase Young just signed for a 3-year $51 million, and he's arguably number two at that position. I would put Josh Sweat above for free agents that are available.
So real quick, it was 11:50 a.m. I said everyone in the league is making moves in free agency, but hey, at least the Cardinals re-signed Evan Brown, Baron Browning, and Kelvin Beachum. And then 24 minutes later, Tallman, we got Sweat. So I didn't even give him 2 hours to start doing
That's great. I don't know. I mean, it's so easy for Cardinals fans to feel that way, the same way you were feeling like, okay, like we're sitting here trying to poke the Cardinals with the stick saying, you know, do something, right? Because we're so used to them after what happened last offseason where, I mean, we carried over like $15 million in cap space from last season that just wasn't spent. And then you see these new casitas going up last season and you go, okay, we got new casitas, but where's the talent on this football team so that we can compete for, there you go. So we can compete for just trying to make the playoffs, right? Trying to be competitive in this league. So it's very easy for, and it wasn't just you. That was felt all across the valley. I mean, if you go on that waste pit of what we now call X, formerly Twitter, I mean, you could just see a bunch of Cardinals fans on there just real upset about, I guess, the lack of action taken to start off the legal tampering period. But hey, Josh Sweat's great. That's a great start. But one sweaty guy is not gonna catapult us into automatic contention for the playoffs perennially. So it's a good start because we got to remember we played all last season without BJ Ojulari, right? He got hurt before the season started. He was supposed to be our top pass rusher, so he's coming into that group. I mean, we've got to remember what happened to Darius Robinson too. I mean, that guy didn't play the first 10 weeks of the season. So what kind of impact can he have coming through actually being healthy going into a full season? So, and then you got the Justin Jones, the Bilal Nichols, those two big signings last off season where we were stoked. And then they, you know, veteran guys, they came in and they just couldn't hang and they just got hurt. So there's a lot of bodies on that front seven at the moment. You know, this was huge. This was exactly what we needed, that proven guy. And as Steve had said, I mean, he shined on the biggest stage. And a lot of people know his name now because of that 2.5-sack performance against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. But, I mean, I was hoping, too. We got Sweat, and then I was like, is there any way we can get Darius Slay to come in here with John Gannon? And but no, of course, the fucking Steelers had to ruin that for us. But no, it's a good start.
I'm really happy with it, honestly, all things considered. And there's still work to be done. They need to re-sign or work out Trey McBride's contract to keep him here more in the long term. But I do want to look at a few other things. I mean, Cardinals related, but I do want to expand it out to the rest of the league a little bit. Because you did mention Darius Slay did sign with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they've had some movement in and around that team. What you mentioned, Justin Fields signing with the Giants. No, he didn't.
Jets.
Okay, Jets. That's right.
$40 million.
Correct stadium. Incorrect team.
I was gonna say the shittier of the two, but then I had to stop because it's like
the bar is so low there.
Both bad. No.
Well, and then also Najee Harris is now on the Chargers. I'm, as a part-time Steelers fan these days, I'm far less hurt by that, having seen Najee Harris be mediocre his entire career, pretty much. He's like consistently an 1,100-yard guy, plays almost every game, so that's great. But he's not the premier back that you're going to pay a lot of money to keep around. I mean, especially with the amount of success that the Steelers have had drafting running backs, going from Le'Veon Bell to Najee Harris to now you got Jaylen Warren, who's come into his own. But the reason I do kind of want to talk about the Steelers is obviously at the top of the show, Steven mentioned they signed DK Metcalf from Seattle, and Seattle is absolutely gutting their entire operation, almost similar to what the 49ers are doing just to be able to sign Brock Purdy. But the Seahawks, just in the last week, they released Tyler Lockett, they traded Geno Smith, they let DK Metcalf walk, and their only, I guess, saving grace is that what quarterback did they get? They got
they signed Darnold.
Sam Darnold, that's right. And so we just got to see him, though, here in Arizona in a playoff game, although it wasn't the Cardinals, it was the Rams playing the Vikings. And Sam Darnold basically didn't show up for that game. He was seeing ghosts again. So now with Josh Sweat rushing him twice a year, I think he might be seeing some more ghosts a couple times throughout the season. But with the DK Metcalf to the Steelers, I think it's great in a way because, you know, now you got George Pickens, DK Metcalf. There is a serious need for receivers in Pittsburgh. You're going to have Pat Freiermuth and Jaylen Warren, as well as whoever else they end up getting either through the draft or scraps in free agency. But the problem in Pittsburgh is similar to a problem in Arizona, except more extreme, is who is going to pass them the ball? You know, last year we did have Fields and Russell Wilson, or I shouldn't say we, the Steelers had Fields and Russell Wilson, but they benched Fields in favor of Russell Wilson, thinking that that would push them over the hump. Didn't necessarily do that. They still reached their goal of being an above 500 team. But to tie it all together full circle and quit my rambling, is there are rumblings on the deep dark corners of the sports web that Tallman knows what I'm going to say, that there are rumors and rumblings of a potential trade between the Cardinals and the Steelers involving Kyler Murray. Now, I don't know what the return for the Cardinals would be, so this could just be written by some fans, but what would you guys think of?
Come on.
Because then in that case, then we're rolling out Jacoby Brissett, who we just signed today, right?
No, so I think one of the story was, so the Cardinals trade Kyler Murray to the Steelers. Again, I don't think it detailed what the Cardinals would get in return. Then the Cardinals sign Aaron Rodgers and trade for Anthony Richardson from the Colts. I think that was something I saw, which was that's just ridiculous.
I'm just fucking like leaving.
Just right, exactly. Just like the whole past week, it was all these rumors. It was like, oh, Arizona's going to trade Kyler Murray to the Giants. It's basic. It's crazy, right? It's crazy. I mean, we've already talked, you know, time in and time again about how Kyler Murray has divided this fan base. You either are on his side or you hate him, and you were saying 2 years ago he should have got traded and not be the starting quarterback for this team. So, and then you have these Giants fans just making up rumors. I mean, come on, the Cardinals are not trading Kyler Murray. That just is the most ridiculous thing if you believe that's going to happen. It's not. It's absolutely not, especially if Jacoby Brissett is going to be the guy that's going to be the starting quarterback for the Cardinals. I just don't see it. It just doesn't make sense. Not when you're going into year three of Jonathan Gannon, where he's doing something good. He's putting something good together in the desert that we haven't had for some time. And we have assets. We have talent on this team, and we have money to spend where we can be competitive. We're also in a division where we just saw the Seattle Seahawks just tear it down and rebuild it up, and they're trying to find lightning in a bottle with Sam Darnold. You have the 49ers who just missed their playoff window of having mystery relevant that they didn't have to pay anything. Now they're paying Brock Purdy. They lost $88 million worth of talent in one day because of all these players that they had to let go. So basically what it is with the NFC West right now. It's the Cardinals and the Rams, where, I mean, the Rams signing Devontae Adams, being able to retain Matthew Stafford. I mean, that's going to be a good team. I just don't see where you would throw away your franchise quarterback in a division where you can be competitive this season. Absolutely can. And you need Kyler Murray to do that. So it's just ridiculous that's even something that people are talking about.
Close that damn article, Chris. That's a blasphemy. Absolute blasphemy. No, yeah, if we were in a complete rebuild, which we were 2 years ago or at the beginning of Jonathan Gannon would have got rid of Kyler. Monty would have got rid of him right away. They would have done something. They would have brought in their guy. I think he survived the rebuild. I think he did just enough with him showing up. He did it in his rehab coming back from injury. He did it with him completely changing who he is as a player off the field. That's the big thing with him. He's completely been transparent with what he's doing. He's doing these fucking cool YouTube videos that I like. He's flying out all of his receivers and tight ends to come and do shit in the offseason, which he didn't do before. So I think now you have Kyler buying in, and now it's kind of like, all right, let's get some weapons. Let's do like VSP Tallman was saying. I hate saying that because I don't want to call him Cody. Like he was saying, though, it's like we haven't really had this in a while. And we've always kind of been like the Shady Acres, like, oh, let's get an old Kurt Warner, or like, let's get like, there's nothing that we would get in return or somebody that would be anywhere near as good or capable as Kyler would be. He's good enough to win games. He's also shitty enough to lose games doing some of the stuff he does. And he tries to get a little too crazy in backyard football with it, but like, he's our best chance right now. And I think he has everybody else around him. That team fucking loves him. The locker room, I think Jonathan Gannon really likes him. I think he's pressing all the right buttons and saying the right things publicly to kind of get Kyler like, yeah, this year's a big year. It's a huge year. I think this is the year where it's kind of like, hey, you've had a couple years now. Now we have like all these assets. It's year two of Marv. Like, it's put up or shut up. And that's what I think. I think next year at this time, I think there might be some rumblings, some legit rumblings, if it's a shitty year or something like that. But I think he carries a hefty price tag. And I think for the Cardinals to trade him, you'd literally have to sell your house to fucking get him. Like, we're not giving him up. But yeah, I think it's March, dude. They got to write something. They need clicks.
Yeah, I don't think the Cardinals are that desperate to get rid of Kyler Murray, because the only thing I could see the argument being is you unload him for like a draft pick or two, and it's basically for the Cardinals just to move to get off of his contract, and you get a couple picks out of it. But I honestly don't see it, because the same conversation we've been having is that if you don't have Kyler Murray, who do you start? And there really is no next best option out there. It's not Jacoby Brissett. There's a lot of people that truly believe that this Cardinals team was just a few wins away from a good playoff run just this last season. Now, I tend to disagree. I think they were whether they actually made the playoffs or not, that's another thing. But making a run and actually being competitive in a playoff game, let alone multiple playoff games, I think that was never really a realistic thing for me. Granted, I mean, if you parlay the upwards trend from last season into this season with some additions, getting Josh Sweat, re-signing these guys, Marvin Harrison year two. But then again, coming back into reality and the situation with the Cardinals is you do have Marvin Harrison Jr., who is going to be your wide receiver one for the foreseeable future. But now you, behind him at the receiver position, you only have really Michael Wilson and Zay Jones. Who is number two in that scenario? I think they really do need to go out there and try and get a true number two wide receiver to pair up with Marv. But the options in free agency are very limited. I mean, guys, we're talking about them at this point getting old ass Keenan Allen. I mean, I don't know if the argument for a mentor kind of player really, really carries any weight, or if that's really what we need. So I do want you guys to chime in on that, but I also want to propose the possibility of kicking the tires on Cooper Kupp, because it's been reported that the Rams are going to move on from him one way or another. And I say throw a sixth round, throw a seventh round pick at the Rams and get him. Yes. So you don't have to do the waiver wire thing, because if he goes to the waiver claim system, Cardinals don't have a chance.
No, I'm with you on that. And Cooper Kupp, he's 32 years old, I think. So he's on the other side of 30 where you don't like to see your NFL players at. But I mean, dude, why not kick the tires on him? Like Chris was saying, see what he's got left. And he's that veteran receiver. I mean, the dude just had the triple crown for receivers. He had arguably the best season four wide receiver probably in history back in, was it 2021? I mean, the guy's talented, right? He's a veteran professional that could come in, fit right into the slot and help Marvin Harrison out. So I like the idea of it. I'm with you. Even if you throw probably a seventh round pick. I mean, that's probably all it's going to take. The Rams already came out and said, hey, if we can't trade for anybody, we're just going to cut them. So that tells you right there, there's no leverage. The Rams have no leverage. They're trying to get anything they can from somebody so that, you know, they, like Chris said, they don't have to battle with other teams to try to get him on their team. So I'm all for it, for throwing something out there, seeing what you can get with Cooper Kupp. It's interesting, but I know what this team really needs is a speedster. It needs a true, you know, downfield threat. Cause right now I don't think we have that. And honestly, 32-year-old Cooper Kupp, I don't know if he's got that left in him either.
Now, I was about to jump in and say, you know, if of all the number two guys on the market or potentially on the market, I know Kupp hasn't officially been cut yet, but yeah, he'd be my pick just because we have not been able to get a guy who really has been able to work out of the slot. I mean, we tried it with Andy Isabella. That, you know, had middling success. I'm looking at this list of guys here and, like, you know, Stephon Diggs, Keenan Allen, Amari Cooper, Mike Williams, Brandon Cooks. Like, these are all guys who have tried, you know, to resuscitate their careers somewhere else, and it didn't really work. So I don't like the idea of the Cards being, like, their, you know, their third team. I think Kupp, you know, he had six touchdowns last year. I think it was the lowest that he's had in quite some time. You know, he's another former Super Bowl darling. From that game with the Rams. So I love the idea of, you know, if you can get him for a sixth or a seventh, you go for it. I just have to say, I know we've kind of beat a dead horse here, but there's no way you're trading Kyler. Like, you can't. That would be waving the white flag. And I just don't think, you know, it's not like if the Suns were to trade Book, like, there'd be no riots in the streets. I don't think there's necessarily like this diehard base of Kyler fans at this point, but he's a known quantity, and you need some kind of stability if you're going to try and make a run in an NFC West that's potentially up for grabs. So I say give him one more chance, but if he doesn't have like a little bit of magic this year, then I think you got to go separate ways.
So I'm going to go unpopular. What if we drafted another wide receiver? What if we went back-to-back first-round wide receivers and got somebody that was like Matthew Golden that we watched from Texas dominate against us? Somebody who's proven he's fat. Dude, guy. I don't – but he's so fast, dude. I think a lot of our questions are going to be answered when the draft starts as far as the offensive side, because a lot of these signings are going to be defensive minded. So I think that we're addressing a lot of our like issues with proven people on the defensive side. I think Monty likes to draft, you know, he likes to build these people. He likes to get, I could see us maybe potentially doing something like that where we do get, you know, McMillan maybe from U of A, or we do get a Matthew Golden, or, you know, somebody that's a speedster guy that's super fast, or McMillan being a little bit bigger and kind of a quicker dude. So, it can't be Marvin and Michael Wilson. Like, that can't be the two targets that we go into this season with as far as our wide receivers. But Cooper Kupp would be cool. Like, definitely. I think he's more than likely going to get cut. I think once teams say that, the likelihood of teams giving up a sixth or seventh, like, it's the smart thing to do. I agree with you guys. It'd be cool if we did that and dodged all the shenanigans and all that. But yeah, I wouldn't mind Cooper Kupp, man.
Well, he's the whole reason you give up a seventh round pick is so that he doesn't go sign with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, he's going to go to Buffalo.
Exactly.
He's going to
anywhere else. You know?
Yeah.
He's going to the Bills, dude.
Joey Bosa just signed a 1-year deal with the Bills. Do you guys see that?
Did he really?
Yeah.
I did see that.
Did you see that? Okay. I don't know how I missed that. That was an hour ago.
I'm excited to watch Najee Harris run 1 year, 12.6.
Yeah. And then the Lions just signed Roy Lopez. So Cardinals just lost their nose tackle. Anyway, that was a total tangent. I apologize.
Oh, it's good information, honestly. I think if the Cardinals that are all interested in Kupp, they have to make a trade offer. I think obviously he's going to be cut. The Rams have no incentive of coming out and saying that they're going to cut him if they can't work out a trade, because all it does is lower his trade value. If they had been like, oh, we'll shop him, but if we can't find a good deal, we'll keep him. They just straight up said like, hey, this guy is about to be thrown on the curb. If anybody wants first dibs, come and give us a late draft pick. My biggest question, though, like looking at this list, obviously it's pretty much a retirement home, a list of undesirable wide receivers. Do any of these guys on this list here, I don't know if it's very seeable, let's make that a little bigger. Do any of these names, do you think they would fare better than Cooper Kupp, where you don't have to trade anyone? I mean, a name that is kind of intriguing to me is Diontae Johnson. He hasn't been around a long time. He's still fairly young. He's had issues though, right? He's had issues.
Yeah, he refused to go in the game for the Ravens, right? And then they cut him the next day.
No, we don't need that shit.
That dude, he's just an absolute cancer. You don't want that guy.
Well, that's fair. Do you sign a Tyler Lockett from the division rival? I mean, he's not a speedster, but he's got some pretty sure hands. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. Now, obviously, none of these names are supremely attractive, but if you're talking wide receiver 2-3, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Stephon Diggs, I mean, he's coming off a major knee injury last season, right? I mean, he was off to a pretty decent start with the Texans. I mean, but you're looking at a bunch of guys that are on the wrong side of 30. You know, I mean, these would be some sexy-ass names 3 years ago, right? But, I mean, it's all about what do you have to pay these guys? And then it just gives you flashbacks of when the Cardinals signed AJ Green, you know, where this is exactly what this would be. And you know what? This might be what we need. And maybe we do draft another wide receiver, but you got to sign that proven veteran wide receiver. I mean, there's a bunch of big names on that. Obviously they're older, they're past their prime, but I mean, there's somebody that can come in here and help. I mean, you just spent a fourth round pick on a wide receiver, like, and he's supposed to be the next Larry Fitzgerald for the Arizona Cardinals. It's like, this guy needs somebody in that room. It can't just be Michael Wilson or it can't be Zay Jones coming back in, being the role model in that wide receiver room. And, you know, you got to bring in somebody else, get a little more talent. And then if you do draft a wide receiver, I mean, if that was going to happen, that screams Monty Williams, you know, trading back in the draft to get more draft capital. Cause I think they only have like 6 picks this draft, but I don't know. I'd like to see him do something. You know, you got the money, you can pay one of those dudes $8-9 million to come in here on a 1-year contract. I mean, just to see what they have, you know, show us what you got. Right. And I definitely expect them to do it. Looking at their projected roster right now, I mean, that wide receiver room needs a lot of help. Trey McBride can't be our number one wide receiver. You know, he's not a wide receiver, he's a tight end, right? So we got to do something.
And I think my biggest thing, like, I agree, we definitely need to do something, because we need to have no excuses left for Kyler Murray when he underperforms. We need to give him the weapons to succeed and to show us what he's got, because I'm not going to get to the end of the season and hear the humming and hawing of, oh, well, Kyler didn't really have anyone to throw to. Like, you can't just throw 80% of your passes to Trey McBride, and Marvin Harrison's only in his second year, so he's still learning. I mean, this kid has gotten excuse after excuse. So if you load up on offensive weapons, you shore up the offensive line, Kyler will either be exposed or he'll thrive. And obviously, I want him to succeed. If Kyler comes out and he has the weapons and he absolutely balls out, then you will not hear any more Kyler hate from me. But it just seems like it's just a never-ending revolving door of excuses with this guy. And I know Matt's not loving this, but
what season did you watch, dude? What the
bro? Oh, I went to the Commanders game where he only threw two passes further than 8 yards down the field.
You guys went with ill intentions and God punished you. You guys went with a sign. You created a sign to spite Cliff Kingsbury and God punished you.
Don't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
I went to the Rams game, dude, and I watched him perform magic. So, like, I get it. He's hot and cold, but he's so much better than you make it out to see. Like, his stats are not terrible at all.
He's great when he's doing 50-yard runs for a touchdown, but ask him to pass the ball 50 yards, and he's not going to be able to fucking do it, Matt.
He does. He has, like, almost 4,000-yard seasons. Come on. What the fuck? Like, he's not that bad.
How many of those are rack yards?
I mean, it doesn't show that, but
3,500, probably.
No, it's not that.
But while we're talking, you know, the wide receiver room, and I know we touched on Trey McBride being technically a tight end, but my biggest hang up with the offense last year was that, you know, Trey McBride, how long did it take before he had his first receiving touchdown? It was like, we're talking like 10, 11, 12 weeks into the season. Like, he was the number one wide receiver. He was racking up yards, but they weren't using him in the end zone. So it's like, your tight end is supposed to be your big body that you're using, that you're drawing up end zone plays for. And it just, that part of our offense didn't exist. So all these like stalled red zone drives just ended because there was just no, we just didn't have that option and teams knew how to exploit it. So I think schematically, like, there are some serious things that we need to fix. Cause if we had Trey McBride as a reliable end zone threat, then maybe we don't need to go out and get like a stud number two. And we could, you know, just like retool with what we have.
Crickets. I'm still, I'm just shocked. I don't know. I don't get how some people just don't like Kyler. Like, I don't know, man. You must not have watched enough fucking Ryan Lindley or John Skelton or Max Hall or any of those goddamn grocery baggers and insurance salesmen now. It's wild, dude. I mean, this year he has a lot to prove. And I hope we do get a lot of things. And I hope he does shut the haters up. Because it is. It's one of those things where it's like, I feel like I stand on the soapbox for the guy. And if he sucks, I'm going to be like, fuck, I eat crow. Like, I just don't think he's that bad. I don't know.
It's more the sour taste that was left in our mouths towards the end of that season because he can't finish a complete season. I mean, he started off half the season great. And then the last 5-6 games, we saw him every single game. He made a Kyler Murray play where it was just one of the worst interceptions you've ever seen or one of the worst decision making you've seen from a quarterback that's your franchise quarterback that's making $50 million. So it's, I think that was very, that happened way too much at the end of last season where every single week we got together to talk about it. It was like, well, look at that one play where there was just terrible decision-making for him towards the end of these seasons. He can't close out, you know? So I'm hearing both of your guys' sides of your argument here. I mean, he is a good quarterback. But Chris, what's the saying when you're only good?
It's good is the enemy of great.
There you go.
And I've said it on this podcast, and I'll say it again. Like, you're right, Matt. Kyler's good. I like him as much
but
as I
can.
But
he's great also. He can be.
No, he's not. Yeah, he definitely. He's not a Super Bowl quarterback. He's never going to win us a Super Bowl. Never. He's not a Super Bowl caliber quarterback.
I don't think it's completely up to him. It's really hard to say a quarterback's going to win you a Super Bowl. Like, it definitely goes a lot more into that. Like, it's not like, I mean, Tom Brady is definitely the enigma with it, where he can just plug and play anybody that Bill Belichick found at the grocery store or whatever the hell. But
so if Kenny Pickett was the quarterback of the Eagles, they still would have won the Super Bowl.
I mean, Jalen Hurts, that's different though. Like,
is it though? Like, I think to give you credence, like there aren't 30 Super Bowl quality quarterbacks. There aren't 15. There might not even be 10 Super Bowl quality quarterbacks, but exactly what your brother just said, when you pay him Super Bowl quarterback money and he doesn't perform like a Super Bowl quarterback, that's when the criticisms start.
I mean, realistically, now he's making a lot less money than Super Bowl quarterback. So he's not getting paid Super Bowl quarterback money.
Well, but at the time, wasn't he like the highest paid quarterback?
That's what they always are, right? Shit like that. So like, he's not getting a shit ton. But I think if you look at
Trevor Lawrence, Tua,
but look what Daniel Jones did. Look what Daniel Jones did. Daniel Jones got paid and shit the fucking bed. Like, I mean, Kyler still threw for over 35. I mean, Daniel Jones is a fucking goober.
He can't.
But like, ran for over 500 yards, over 5 touchdowns rushing, 3,500 yards passing, 20 plus touchdowns. Like, I think there's a lot more that goes into it. I think we definitely need another wide receiver. It would be fucking cool. Like, but yeah, this is a big year. It's like if we don't get like a proven one or like find. Like, I was hoping we got, like, T. Higgins. That would have been freaking cool, like, to get somebody like that. But, yeah, I don't think he's – yeah, he's 14. No, I know we can't get T. Higgins.
He's going to get franchise tag.
But, like, he's – realistically, he's making – he's better than a lot of the dudes that are making more money than him. Like, in my book, like, Trevor Lawrence.
So, this is weird because like, Max Crosby is not a quarterback. Neither is Joshua Hines.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
I don't know how this filter is working out. So 12.
But, I mean, all right. So he's like
12.
Yeah, he's just outside.
So he's almost a top 10 being paid like a top 10 quarterback. But my point is, he is not a top 10 quarterback.
But I mean, if you look at the other people in front of him that are getting paid more, he's better than them. I would say. I think he's better than Derek Carr. I think he's better than Trevor Lawrence. I think he's a little bit more reliable than Tua. Like, Tua got a fucking big paycheck. Like, Joe Burrow's better than Kyler, without a doubt. You know how I feel about Joe Burrow, but like, we all know how I feel about Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow.
But look what he did, dude. The dude performed and did fucking craziness.
Oh, he's incredible. He's on that short list of elite quarterbacks.
But like, I mean, Josh Allen's paid way more now. So Josh Allen's above him. But like, I guess they have Daniel Jones. He's on the Colts now. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Jared Goff or Kyler Murray?
Kyler Murray.
Yep.
Okay.
So like,
I'd rather have Trevor Lawrence than Kyler Murray though. Yeah.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Why?
I mean,
one, because he's,
why do you like Trevor Lawrence?
Are you remember the
Titans? He's a great player. He's just in
Sunshine, do you like that movie?
Jacksonville is where you go to die. And unfortunately, he's just dying there. So it's sad, but I mean, he's a hell of a quarterback. And I don't know. Maybe it's because he's like 6'6". Maybe it's just I want somebody tall that can see.
Is that the only reason?
No. He's got beautiful hair. I just want to run my fingers.
I mean, Kyler's got some nice hair, but I mean.
No, it just gets caught up in there. I gotta
be able to run. He loves what he did at Clemson.
We've been starved of seeing a traditional like Kurt Warner, Carson Palmer style quarterback like this. We've been seeing so many of these broken run plays over the years that just like have been our downfall. So many bubble screens. Like, we kind of want to see just like a typical guy, a gunslinger, go back there and just, you know, play the position the way it traditionally has been played. And I don't know if that's the right, you know, necessarily the right move, but yeah, we've kind of been starved of that, watching Kyler try and look over his offensive linemen.
That's a big thing for me, Steve, is like watching him pass from the pocket. When he tries to pass from the pocket, it seems like he can barely see over the line. And then there were a couple times this season where he was rolling out of the pocket and almost in lockstep with dude, tries to throw it, and it just gets batted down right there. And I mean, I get it. Matt, I get it. Your brother, Tallman, like you said, like those negative plays, those plays where he's getting blocked, where he's getting swallowed in the pocket, those are going to be burned more into the memory than the good 15-yard pass he made to Trey McBride. Like, but at the same time, there were several times where Trey McBride made Kyler look really good on some of those deeper throws where he was going up and catching balls in double coverage and doing front flips and hurdling guys. But I digress. I talk enough shit about Kyler Murray.
Yeah, then you also got to remember those injuries on the offensive line. I mean, a lot of the times, imagine being 6 foot behind that big ass line and they can't block for shit for you. And you're just constantly just running for your life and being rushed through every, you can't make any progressions. That's a lot of that happened to Kyler Murray last season. So we got to remember that, but it's the NFL though. We're not going to have the best offensive line in the league. Even then there's talent that's going to be able to beat your offensive line. So it's, I don't know, but you got to remember that though. Last season was tough. There were several games where he was running for his life the entire game.
Well, if they can shore up the O-line a little bit, hopefully that won't be as big of an issue. But while we're still talking Cardinals, as we kind of start to wind down in the back half of the pod here, I do want to touch on Kyler Murray's backup, newly acquired or agreed to terms with quarterback Jacoby Brissett, the 32-year-old former Patriot. Brown, he's been all over the place. This is the guy who's going to come in for Kyler Murray should he go down. He has the height that Tallman likes so much. He's about 6'3". He's a veteran backup, and from what I hear and know about Jacoby Brissett, you can actually trust him to throw balls down the field. Whereas sometimes with backups, you want them to just come in, manage the game, hand the ball off, do the safe plays. But Jacoby Brissett has been a starter in this league when called upon. He is getting paid, I think, about $6.5 million average each year. So I'm not quite sure, but I think that's pretty high for a backup. Hopefully we never have to see him take the field, but what do you guys think of this backup QB signing?
I love it. I mean, he's got all the talent, or excuse me, all the experience, and $6 million, $7 million, that's high-end backup money right there. So he's a good backup quarterback. And again, yeah, hopefully we don't have to see him, but no, I think it's great. I mean, it's somebody that can come. I mean, he started the season for the Patriots, and then obviously he got benched in favor of Drake May because – I mean, Drake May was what, the second overall pick. So obviously you start the season off shitty, you're going to put in Drake May after, I think it was week six, he got brought in. But I mean, this is a guy that can come in and, you know, he's got experience playing in the league. He started several games, and it's somebody that can win a football game for you if Kyler's got to take a week off or take 2 weeks off. So it's good to have that experience and not rely on a rookie quarterback or somebody that, like Clayton Tune, who has no experience. And the only start he made was when he was given to the Wolves in Cleveland that one year where we lost, I think, like 29-0 or something. So it's good. It was a good signing. Worth the $6.5 million. Absolutely.
Well, and do you know who was there with him in Cleveland that year in 2022? Drew Petzing. So there's another tie and familiarity there.
Yeah, I think this is great. I think I saw Zach Wilson sign with the Dolphins the other day for like a year, $6 million, $10 million. When you have a quarterback, I don't want to see Jacoby Brissett go down, but he's a proven, I hate to use the term, game manager, where he can still make the throws down the field and you can kind of trust him to do it because he has done it as a starting quarterback. He knows how to prepare like a starting quarterback. So God forbid Kyler goes down, you really want somebody that, I mean, literally touches the ball on every single offensive snap. You want him to be comfortable, proven, understand the game speed. I love me some Tune time. Like, I love Clayton Tune, but yeah, it makes you feel a little bit better in the event that, because it has happened. We have seen Kyler go down, whether he goes out for a couple plays, maybe it's a drive, or hell, we saw him with the ACL and all that fun stuff. But yeah, it's a great signing. I don't know who else we would have really gotten, and I hope we don't see him ever. So good to see him on the sidelines.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is another kind of smart move that good teams make. And I, again, don't really hope that we see much of him because that means that Kyler's having another rough year. But yeah, I think there's we got to figure out some more. There are a few more, to me, gaping holes in this roster, particularly around the O-line, that I really hope that we see them either prioritize in the draft or get one of these remaining guys that are out there. Because whoever is throwing for the Cards, if we can't keep them safe, it's going to be a long season.
Without a doubt. So I expect more moves to come. You know, by this time in the next 2 weeks, over the next couple of days, I'm sure we'll hear more news and we'll be talking about it. But before we start to wrap up, Tallman and I went a little long on the Phoenix Suns last week, and not a whole lot has changed since then, but they did drop. They won one game, and then they lost yesterday, I think it was, to the Memphis Grizzlies, a depleted, beat up Memphis Grizzlies team. They didn't have Zach Edey, maybe their best player, Jaren Jackson Jr., didn't have Brandon Clark and a couple other role players. And guys like, I think at least five of the guys I read were rotational players that got minutes for the Grizzlies, and we still couldn't win. It was only a 2-point loss. But at this point, when you're fighting to get into that 10th seed in the play-in, you can't afford to lose any more of these games. Tom, and I know you and I went long on this, but I got to ask these two here, Steven and Matt, with the Suns where they're at now, they don't have their draft pick for this year. So being a lottery team doesn't benefit them in any way. So they kind of have to go for that 10th seed and try and make a playoff push. But does it seem like they're even trying? Okay, two-part question. One, do you want them to try and make a playoff push? And two, do you see them actually successfully making it as the 10th seed?
How bleak it is that we are now at the point in the season where we have to talk about what hoops they need to jump through just to get the 10 seed so that they could then go play, what, 3 games in 5 days to then go lose to, what, the Thunder? I honestly really don't care. The play-in games, I feel the same way about the first four in college basketball. They're fun. They're gimmicky. They give you something to do before the real, like, meal. But it's a lost season. You got to just, I think, pack it in. I think we're pretty locked in. You know, like you said, we don't have control of that pick. So it's not like you can start tanking and hope that you get one of these guys that, you know, it's a pretty deep draft. So there should be hopefully a lot of talent available toward kind of the end of the lottery, which is probably where the Suns will find themselves. Whether they're in the play-in, whether they're not in the play-in, I don't know. I think Suns fans just kind of want this whole thing to be over.
Yeah, I'm so disgusted, dude. I'm so mad. We used to be so fun to watch. Like, I loved our young nucleus. We were so, I loved it when we had, like, I mean, I know now it's funny, but we were great with DeAndre Ayton, and then we had Cam, and it's just, we were so fun, so energetic. There was so much like cohesiveness. I watched the game the other night against the Mavs. Dude, we looked so just fucking, it's, everybody's already made their vacation plans. Like, the Cabo trip's been booked, boys. Like, get the banana boat ready, like, whatever the hell, like, that's it. It's the Kevin Durant project has failed. That's what I think. I think we got to get whatever we can at this point. I think it's done. I think the big three, we got to keep Dev. Book's got to stay. But I think it's over. I think the fan base is kind of really, really done with it. And yeah, it wasn't fun to watch. Like, we looked so just not in it. Like, I think everybody's kind of over it. But if we do get in, like, you know, Steven was saying, like, what? To do what? Like, it's like every Arizona sports team does this stupid thing where they ride this giant roller coaster and it's super high, and then they have to go through all these stupid things to make it to the playoffs, and they never have their own destiny in their own hand. It never happens with Arizona sports teams. So
yeah, we literally just saw it at the end of the last baseball season with the Diamondbacks, mm-hmm. where it's like, if this team wins and then if this team loses, and then we had the utter collusion between, what was it? It was the Mets and the
yeah, dude.
The Braves. Yeah. Where they played a doubleheader and they were kind of like, hey, wink, wink, nod, nod. You win one, we win one. Then we're both in and fuck the Diamondbacks. And it's like, and what was funny, not to chime in on that, but while we're talking about jumping through hoops, what was hilarious about that is that they had all the games start at the same exact time the day before to avoid any type of collusion. And then just to have that doubleheader the next day to have that collusion. Now, I don't know what the alternative would have been. Honestly, I don't. But one of the Diamondbacks players said it best. Like, you never want to rely on that. You want to have your destiny in your own hands. And you don't want to have to be in a position where you're relying on other teams to do this or that or the next thing. Now, in the Suns' case, it is very beneficial to us that the Dallas Mavericks have been plagued by injuries and don't really seem to have much juice left in the tank or much of a desire to win, period. But at the same time, it's also starting to seem like the Suns don't have any desire to win or make that 10th seed. I mean, the games I was talking about, like, we barely squeaked out that win against the Clippers. No Kawhi Leonard. That was great. Great two-point win. I'll take it. Clippers are going to be a playoff team. The Nuggets, competitive. We lost by 8. That's fine. I can take that. The Nuggets are a really good team. The beat-up Dallas Mavericks. Now, we were in the lead the whole game. I don't think we ever trailed in this game, but we didn't even win by double digits against a Mavericks team with no Kyrie Irving, no Anthony Davis, no Luka Doncic, nobody. Like, Jason Kidd almost suited up and started playing in that game. I think things have been so bad for them. But then to lose this game against a beat-up Grizzlies team, now tomorrow you're going back into Houston to take on the Rockets, who you just lost to just a couple weeks ago with our own Michael Benjamin in attendance. Just seems like, Matt said, they have their vacations booked. They don't want to have any plans in May or June or whenever the hell the fucking playoffs start. And honestly, like, I want them to make the playoffs just because, like, you know, get in and you never know. But I have absolutely zero faith in this team whatsoever. And this is when the finger pointing starts. And I think another big reason why I don't think that this team has any desire to make the playoffs is you're already seeing reports about what they're going to do in the offseason and a ton of buzz about moving Kevin Durant. And how are you going to have these articles and these conversations when there's still, you know, what, 15 games or so left to play in the season? It's done. The Suns season is over. And now, like, I was on here last week saying that I want them to keep the big three intact. I want them to run it back with Bud and maybe try once more to build a team around him. But there's nobody. There's nobody that the Suns can A, afford, or B, you know, get here with their financial situation. So somebody has to go. Beal is not going to waive his no trade clause. He is going to bleed every single dollar dry from the Phoenix Suns that he can. Devin Booker is the face of your franchise. So the only movable piece is Kevin Durant, and that really sucks. But now you're talking getting, I think what they said, 3 first round picks, maybe a role player. I don't know, guys. Like, I don't know. Is that enough for Kevin Durant? Pushing the reset button really feasible here?
I mean, you're only going to get 75 cents on the dollar from what you sent out. Like, I mean, you look at just how that trade mortgaged the future. So yeah, if we could get 3 reliable picks back, sure, great. But it's still going to sting every time I see Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges suit up, because, man, like, they were such great, fun players to watch start their careers with the team. You know, here's my hot take. I hate it, but I think this is going to be a hot stove summer where we're going to see a lot of Devin Booker trade machine action. I think there's a lot of teams that are out there that are going to think that he's available because of what a disaster this year was. I'm not saying that I am okay with it. There would be riots in the streets. He is, like you said, the face of the franchise, but I think there's a lot of teams out there, a lot of NBA Redditors who are licking their chops right now, wondering not how they pry away KD, but how they pry Booker away. So I think that's what I'm going to be watching closest.
I think, you know, as much as it pains me to admit, I think you're right. I think Booker is in the prime of his career. He's the youngest of the big three. He's the most reliable, the most durable, an Olympic gold medalist. You know, the resume goes on and on. There's so much upside for Devin Booker. And when we talk about who is really the GM and who's pulling the strings, obviously the guy with the title is James Jones. But the guy who appears to be making all these moves is Matt Ishbia, who just so happens to be the same guy that's signing all the checks. It seems like he doesn't have any desire to be in the second apron again next season. So moving KD, like if you move KD and Booker, like you're genuinely hitting the full reset button. But honestly, like if I'm looking at it objectively, taking my emotion out of it for how much I do want Devin Booker to be here, that might be the best option to reset. Cause in 2 years you're off the Beal contract. If you trade both Booker and Durant, you're going to have all the draft picks in the world. And you're going to have a lot of cap space left as well. So it's a tough pill to swallow. It really is. I think we all expected Booker to play his entire career here. And the way things were trending, we thought that he'd be here playing for a competitive team. But now we're going to miss the playoffs, guys. And that's something I never really thought was possible. If you asked me 2 years ago if I thought the Suns were going to miss the playoffs anytime in the next 5 years, I would have laughed in your face straight up. So I don't know, Tallman, I know we talked about it in depth last week, but any new feelings emerge in the past 7 days?
What do you think? No, of course not.
Probably not. Probably only got
I mean, the right? only the one feeling was, of course, Nikola Jokic had to have that record-breaking game against the Suns. It's just it's so Arizona. I mean, he had the first NBA triple-double with 30 points, 20 assists, 20 rebounds, which is just – that's just a ludicrous stat line right there. And of course it had to come against the Suns, but then you look at that game and you're like, damn, I mean, we had a chance to win that game against a really good basketball team. And then I don't know what happened in overtime. I think it was tied or close to tied to the most points scored in an overtime period, which is crazy. There's just a lot of points scored in that period. So you go from that. And then, I mean, I was watching the Mavs game, and then it goes in, you go into halftime against the Mavericks. You're only up by 6 points. And then I'm watching the halftime show. Stephen A. Smith's on there. He's like, yeah, the Suns are winning, but they should be destroying the Mavericks right now. And there is no excuse why they're not. And he is absolutely right. You know, we should have been up by 15 points. But the thing this Suns team can't do is they don't blow teams out. You know, they don't win by more than single digits. If you look up how many double-digit wins this team has, it's only like 9 or 10 of them throughout the entire season, which is just crazy. And I think a couple of those 10 were by exactly 10 points. So, and then you look at this Memphis. Why can't we beat Memphis? Especially when they don't – I mean, the Memphis got the season sweep on the Suns, and that's a frustrating game. And you have – who is that white kid that was talking shit to Kevin Durant? Do you guys see that?
Oh, is it like Cam Spencer or something?
Yeah,
like
who the fuck is that kid? You know, he's fucking mouthing off to Kevin Durant, getting in Kevin Durant's head. There's a technical foul called, and then that just totally shifted the outcome of that game, or just the momentum that any momentum the Suns had. That technical foul just totally derailed it. And then so you lose to the Grizzlies, and then on the backside, the Mavericks beat the Spurs with 8 players, which is crazy. So you have the Mavericks winning, the Suns losing again, and then I think the Trailblazers even won too as well. So it's, I mean, yeah, the Mavericks don't have any players left, and you expect them to lose a lot of games, but the Suns got to win some of these games, right? And we have like the third or fourth hardest schedule remaining in the season, but we have to find a way to win some of these games if we're even going to have a chance. So it's just... Okay. I did have some new stuff. It's just more negative stuff about the Suns. And thanks for making us end with this topic.
No, I mean, you're right. We should go out on a positive note, but I think it's just having hope right now for the Suns is the worst thing you could possibly do for yourself. I think just throw away this season and let's see what happens in the off season. I think there's going to be plenty of time for us to have those hard conversations about what do we do with our big three? And honestly, what do we do with Mike Budenholzer? Do you let him run it back? Cause I think there's a lot of danger in firing a coach for the third year in a row and going on your fourth coach in 4 years. I just, despite what your criticisms for Mike Budenholzer that are justified, like not playing Ryan Dunn, like leaving Tyus Jones in there, who's an absolute defensive liability, it's just, it's tough. But again, this is his first year. There's going to be growing pains, and it just sucks that we, I think had we had a consistent coach, I'm not saying Monty Williams, but I'm saying a consistent coach for the last 2-3 seasons, that this team wouldn't be in as bad of a situation as it is right now. And there's just no cohesion between all the roster movement and the coaching turnover. It's like Matt Ishbia and James Jones are just, have just been throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks, and none of it is sticking. But guys, I did say that I wanted to end on a high note. It's been a lot of negativity. So if you got to bounce, you can bounce. But we were going to do trivia today, but it didn't happen. So I think if you guys would like to join me, I think we should all do the Daily Dozen together. What do you guys think?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go.
We'll finish off with a high note.
All right, Steve, I'll let you pick. Which square do we want to start with? We got to do all of them anyway.
I think we got to take chain restaurants.
Chain restaurants, all right. Founded in 1969, this California-based upscale grocery chain currently offers a viral $19 strawberry. Oh, my wife would know this one.
Erewhon?
That, I think that's right. How do you spell that?
Erewhon.
Let's go. 1 for 9 to start it out. And this is good practice for Twins Basil here, because if you don't know, Steve, they've lost every single trivia match they've done here on Valley Sports Plug.
I'm sorry to hear that, guys.
Yeah, my partner sucks.
As half of the current defending champs, I hope you guys turn it around.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure at some point you guys are going up against one another.
Thank you for the kind words of trying to motivate us. I appreciate that.
A little positivity. I like it. All right, Tallman's, you pick next category. Either one of you.
Just do golf.
Somehow I knew you were going to say golf. After back-to-back Tiger wins in 2001 and 2002, this Canadian golfer defeated Len Mattis in a playoff to win the 2003 Masters. Oof.
Is DJ Singh Canadian?
No, I think he's... I think he's South African or something. Not because I think he's like Ernie Els. Like Ernie Els is South African. Maybe though.
That's not a bad guess.
Dude, that's hard.
I was gonna say Justin Rose, but I think he's English.
Yeah, he's not Canadian.
Phil Mickelson's definitely not Canadian.
2003 Masters champion.
Trying to think about who was good in 2003. I was not watching golf in 2003.
No.
Full transparency here.
Well, even the name that he defeated, like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah, Len Mattis? I have no idea.
All right, can you skip it?
Yeah, we can come back to it.
I picked golf. That was a curveball.
You're good. Let's just keep going around here.
We'll talking about curveballs. Pick MLB.
So MLB, a fourth round pick, Russell Wilson hit 5 home runs in 93 minor league games from 2010 to 2011 while under contract with this National League West franchise. Russell Wilson, like the quarterback Russell Wilson?
Yeah. Was it Texas Rangers?
No, they're AL.
Oh, they
That's a good point. Yeah.
So, okay. West, the D-backs.
Oh, yeah. So it's D-backs, Rockies.
The Padres.
I want to say it was Padres. The Rockies?
I think it might be.
Yeah. Rockies.
It might be Rockies at Colorado.
All right. Nice. That's correct. All right.
Hell yeah.
Let's do it. So NFL, after a one-season Jets stint that included a contract holdout, Hassan Reddick just signed a 1-year, $14 million deal with this NFC team this week.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yep, the Bucs. He went back.
See, I didn't even know that.
He went back to be with Todd Bowles.
Oh, Todd Bowles. That makes sense. All right. Books. Got some readers.
I don't know how to read.
I know. It's kind of hard because it's kind of tiny, too. Living from 1928 to 2016, this Romanian-born writer is most known for their memoir, Night, recalling his experience as a Jewish prisoner in concentration camps. Is that Elie Wiesel?
Yeah, I think it is.
I was going to say Anne Frank.
Now, how do you spell that is the next
one. There he is, the third one down.
This fucker said yeah. Anne Frank.
I don't think Anne Frank lived to 2016. Just
who is the bitch that lived in the attic?
That was Anne Frank.
Was it?
Same. And her family. I mean, nobody talks about the rest of her family.
All right.
Well, they're not important.
All right, move on.
Yeah, let's go past this.
All right, we got television here. From 2011 to 2012, this e-reality show featured one of Kris Jenner's daughters and former NBA Sixth Man of the Year winner.
Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Yeah, yeah, right? It's the show.
Oh, that is
right?
What it is. Yeah, it is.
Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
I thought they were going to... What?
Oh, did they have their own like spinoff show?
Kris Jenner's daughters and a former NBA Sixth Man.
It says the reality show. Did they? I didn't know they had another
for a year.
Oh, was it like Khloe and Lamar's?
What did they do?
Oh, yeah.
Was it Crack House Binge or something?
Yeah, because Lamar was a sixth man.
Brothel.
The brothel champion.
So what's like? Yeah, Khloe and Lamar.
The Candyman,
probably
brothel.
Something like that, right? There will be an opportunity for one double dip after right, we finish all of them. So this might be the one we come back to, but let's see how we do with these other ones. We'll go movies. Before Parasite and Mickey 17, Bong Joon-ho made his English film directorial debut with this 2013 post-apocalyptic action thriller starring Chris Evans.
Snowpiercer.
That was, yeah, Snowpiercer, right?
That was a good movie.
Good movie and a good show.
Yeah, the show was.
I think one word.
Is it one? Okay. Yeah.
I mean, Chris's spelling is definitely being.
Shut the fuck up. The Snowpiercer. That was a good movie. That was a good movie.
But, all right.
Music. Before joining the band he's most known for, this legendary drummer was part of the ska band The Aquabats from 1996 to 1998. Where he donned the character the Baron Von Tito. Legendary drummer?
What does it say? What was it?
Tito? The Baron Von Tito. So like I'm thinking legendary drummers, right? Was Dave Grohl was with Nirvana, right?
Yeah, but he might have been in Aquabats before.
Before that, right? Well, I mean 96 to 98. When did Kurt Cobain shoot himself? That was like 96, yeah. Right? No.
He didn't shoot himself, Chris.
Did he die? About that, okay, right? When Courtney Love shot him, whatever. Did he die before or after Tupac is my question.
Probably same year.
Tupac's I bet still you alive.
Ben's always waiting for me to bust out the Tupac trivia questions. So Travis Barker, Blink-182. I don't think Travis Barker would have been with the Aquabats.
No, they're too goofy.
Yeah,
he was in Transplants, which was like way more hardcore punk.
Yeah,
who's the band, the drummer for Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Oh, that's a good question.
I just know John Frusciante and Flea.
God, what's his name?
The Baron Von Tito. I feel like that's a hint that's not really a hint. It does nothing for me.
The fact that it's legendary drummer, I think you just got to go Dave Grohl.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us have... How do you spell Grohl?
G-R-O-H-L.
Are they not even gonna... Is he not even an option?
Well, they...
All right, what's that saved us?
Okay.
Travis Barker?
Yeah.
I mean, it's worth a shot. Fuck.
Yeah.
It could be it. Watch Blink-182 had a different...
Because it's only for two years, right? And then maybe after that, he went to go be with Blink-182?
I like that. Try that. That's a good guess.
Let's go. Travis Barker it was. Hey, not bad for a shot in the dark. All right, the celebrity matchup. This one's always fun.
Oh,
good Lord.
Wow.
Oh, man. So, Tallman, this is if you're unfamiliar with the celebrity matchup, this is a female celebrity on a male celebrity body.
James Marsden looks like the head, the hair.
I could see that.
And like maybe Gal Gadot. With the face?
I could see that as well. I feel like that. I feel like this could also be like Penn Bagley or Patrick Dempsey. Probably not. I don't think the head's old enough for Patrick Dempsey though.
Who's the dude from fucking Guardians of the Galaxy?
Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt.
That's like his hair. That's that Jurassic Park fucking hair.
But at the chin, I don't think that's his chin and jawline though.
No, that looks like Homeboy from Magic Mike.
Who's James Marsden?
That's Channing Tatum, dude.
That is not Channing Tatum. Get the fuck out of here.
James Marsden has been, he's one of those guys that like once you saw him, he was in Westworld. He was just in that show Jury Duty. He hasn't really like had like a, I don't know, a big star.
I know what you mean though. Is that probably if I Google a picture of James Marsden, I'll be like, oh yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm down for Marsden and Gal Gadot. I don't know. It seems like
deal. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Danilo Gallinari. For a second.
Wait, so is Gal Gadot not an option?
Saved again.
I guess so. Huh. Okay. That's not Taylor Swift, is it?
Sandra Bullock?
Oh.
I just watched Miss Congeniality.
Not a bad guess. Looks younger though. Looks younger than.
It could be an older picture, but those
this
are.
This is true. Eyes, this is true. All right, Sandra Bullock.
Let's go for it.
What do we have to lose, right? Ugh. It was James Marsden though.
That's a good guess. I was gonna say Dylan Mulvaney.
All right. So who is this 2003 Masters winner? Do we want to try Vijay Singh?
No.
He's been around for a while, right? Is John Daly Canadian?
No.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
Okay. That's the most red-blooded American man.
Yeah.
Walked on the course.
Isn't like Masters Week? He always posts up at the Hooters the whole week.
I think so.
Has like meet and greets and stuff. Well, not anymore. Hooters is going out of business, so he's gonna have to find another titty bar, but All right, let's see if we get saved by Vijay Singh or nope. Oh wait, there it is. Is it
I think it's at the bottom.
Oh, this one. This is Vijay Singh. All right. Nope. All right.
Can't see it.
So tic-tac-toe three in a row. What do we want to do our double dip on? The reality show, the female celebrity, or the golfer?
The Chloe and Lamar one.
Yeah, let's see if that's like... Oh, yeah, literally Chloe and Lamar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be it, right?
That's it.
It was literally called Chloe and Lamar. That's crazy. All right, let's see. We can see what we got right. So only 13% of people got the celebrity mashup. So I can rest easy on that one. The most people got the television one.
Shocker. Kind of
crazy. Yeah. But honestly, let's see the correct answers.
Yeah.
So it was Mike Weir.
Who?
What?
Yeah, I don't know who Mike Weir is.
Oh, that's pretty weird.
And then it was Minka Kelly.
Who
the hell is Minka Kelly?
Yeah, pull it up.
Actress and philanthropist. Oh, hold on. Let me drag it over. Oh.
She's like Tony Stark.
What is she from? She was in 500 Days of Summer. Just Go With It. The show Friday Night Lights.
So a bunch of just nothing.
Euphoria, if that's your... If that's your thing, if you like softcore porn, all right, to each their own, I guess. Interesting. Well, guys, thank you for playing trivia with me. I think that was good practice for the Tallmans. Very, very much needed it. And it was obviously always a pleasure talking sports with you boys. But I do want to give you each the floor one last time. I know we're a bit disconnected from the sports talk now, but if there's anything positive or negative that you'd like to get out there, let's start with Steven. We'll go counterclockwise.
I'm going to say this is the best time of the year. We got March Madness coming up. It's spring training season. It is wildly expensive to get out to a game nowadays. I was just trying to look at tickets to a Cubs game and was blown away. I think they're more expensive than D-backs games were this last season. But yeah, get outside, go touch grass, enjoy it. And then I look forward to next week being able to talk through the bracket. Selection Sunday is this weekend, so we'll have a bracket next time I see you. And yeah, enjoy. Don't get too crazy.
Hell yeah. And we're going to try. We've done it before. I don't know if we did it last year, but we're going to do a VSP bracket challenge where you get to go against all of your favorite Valley Sports Plug hosts and contributors. So I expect all you boys to make a bracket. That's your homework assignment. But make sure you watch next Tuesday so you know how to form your bracket based off the expert knowledge of Stephen Miller. When do the games start? Do they start Tuesday, or that's when the first four games are, right?
First four, but bracket competitions don't take the first four into account. They're literally just the appetizers. Thursday morning at, I think it's like 8 a.m., 9 a.m. Our time is when the first games will start.
Hell yeah. And I really, like, historically don't like to do my bracket until the first four games are done, because I just don't like the prospect of putting one of those, because it's like either or, it's just messy. But it's another conversation for another day. Matt, Mr. T Jr., what you got for us?
Prayers out to Tiger Woods. That shit sucks. Yeah, the Achilles sucks. We are officially 29 days away from Masters Week. So the Masters is always nice because it's right after March Madness. March Madness is a blast. I'm excited to lose a lot of fucking money gambling on a bunch of games that I have no business gambling on. UFC this past weekend sucked. Alex Pereira fucking laid an egg. I think you guys, any one of us, had a better chance of maybe throwing a punch. I don't know. I'm excited. It's fun. It's kind of this lull moment where we like sit and read stupid articles that say the Steelers are going to trade for Kyler Murray and fill out brackets. So football, please come back. God damn it. But no, it's always fun. I appreciate it. The blessing, treat. Thank you guys.
Pleasure having you, Matt. VSP Tallman, my boy, what you got?
Oh yeah. So, yep. This is that time of year, March Madness, where I bet too much money on teams that I've never watched a second play, but that's not what I'm excited for. Talking about spending money, I just renewed my D-backs TV subscription today, so I am ready for some fucking baseball. You had to end us talking about the Suns, and then the whole time I'm like, when can we start talking about baseball and the Diamondbacks? Because this is going to be such a fun season. And Steve, you're absolutely right, man. Spring training is not what it used to be. Just wait for the regular season to start. You can get tickets to a game that actually matters for like 15, 20 bucks. So I feel your pain, though. I'm itching to get out to a game. We're talking about going to opening day, but it's a double whammy. It's opening day. Everybody and their mom wants to go. And we're playing the Chicago Cubs, which everybody knows when it comes to Chicago sports teams, what it's like to try to go to a game where your team is playing a Chicago team. It's even more expensive. So maybe we're going to wait. We're going to hold off on opening day, but we're going to get out there soon. That's for sure.
Oh, without a doubt. As far as being able to attend sports live and in person, baseball is by far and away the most affordable option. And it's just a great time. Like even my wife likes going to games. She has no idea what's going on. She doesn't give a shit about baseball, but the environment's fun. Getting out on the town's fun, having a few beers, doing it with the friends and family is even better. So expect the Valley Sports Plug boys to get down to a couple of games this season. But fellas, really appreciate you hopping on to this round table. In 2 weeks, we will be doing our MLB preview stream. So Tallman, come prepare. You got the week off next week. We're going to give you a week off, Michael Benjamin's going to be back. And then in 2 weeks, we're going to be talking MLB baseball. But thank you all so much for tuning in. If you're listening back on the playback and you've made it this far, you're a real one. We thank you so much. Probably don't have to ask you to subscribe. But if you haven't yet, what are you doing? Please go ahead and hit that subscribe button on YouTube. If you're listening back on the audio only version, you can like us and subscribe on there as well. I believe we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere audio podcasts are listened to, you'll find us there. And of course, at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, and TikTok. But for Stephen Miller, Mr. T Jr., and VSP Tallman, I'm Chris Patrick, and we'll see you next time. Peace.